evening, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all you Irishmen, which means everybody in the United States today. We're all Irish today. No matter what our origins or ethnicity is, we're all Irish. But we're not going to talk about St. Patrick's Day today. We've got a couple of things on the docket. We've got the Ferguson report, the Department of Justice Ferguson report. We got Hillary Clinton's email situation. We have the Tom Cotton's letter to Iran that was signed by the 47 senators. And we just got breaking news out of Illinois that the non-gay Congressman Aaron Schock has resigned under allegations of criminal wrongdoing.
So the next person has to come up with, has to paint that office. I mean, I don't watch Downton Abbey, but that office is.
I think they get some kind of allocation to furnish their office. So somebody's going to have to, I guess, dismantle that whatever stuff. I don't even know what that is. Like it's like feathers and stuff.
It looks like from what I've seen, the walls are red, which I don't have a problem necessarily, but it looks like they added a bunch of wainscoting and they put all kinds of pictures of president, you know, American presidents all in a line, and it's just very fussy, I guess.
Right.
Down to the Abbey,
definitely,
so it's
definitely,
kind of country.
But not gay at all.
We know that
he's not gay. He has
no,
not.
No, he's
been,
not.
And
not that there's anything wrong with that.
Right.
Yeah. All right,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
All right. I just want to start a follow-up on a story we talked about towards the end of the show last week. A criminal case in my neck of the woods in southern New Jersey of a husband who was accused of murdering his wife. He's in custody. He's been arrested. They have not found the body. And there's been radio silence from law enforcement and the press on this for about 2 months. And yesterday, the husband's mother was charged with being an accessory to conceal the murder, which I assume includes hiding the body.
Wow.
That is, like, beyond horrific.
Yeah.
Somebody would do something like that. But it probably is a path forward to finding the body because, you know, now she's out on bail, but you know they can put more pressure on Sonny Boy saying, you know, we're gonna lock his mother up. So they could think, because if you're, I think I'm not a lawyer, but you know, if you're an accessory to murder, like if you know that a murder happened and you don't report it and you aid and abet in disposing of the evidence, you're just as guilty as the person who committed the murder. I think that's the spirit of the law.
Right.
Well, they can, they have arrested her. She's out on bail. I think they could probably charge her with more things. But, now they could put pressure on the both of them, and hopefully one of them will spill where the body is, so at least the family can get the satisfaction of being able to bury their sister and their cousin and then their friend. It's just a horrible, horrible.
Is this family full? Is this not a husband or boyfriend, whatever? Is he and his mother criminals? Are these people absolute criminals? Is that what this? I can't imagine that even though, you know, I get along with my parents, I can't imagine me going to my mother or my father and saying, "Hey, I killed my husband. Can you help me?"
Right.
You know, find the evidence. I mean, I can't see that ever happening. So
he has been in prison on I think on drug charges, maybe other things, and he had been recently released, like sometime during the year last year. He does have a criminal record, and he has a known substance abuse problem, but I don't know about I don't know if his mother has any kind of criminal record. There's nothing in the news today, but maybe we should learn some more after a couple of days. New Jersey technically has the death penalty on the books, but they haven't executed anybody in decades, so I don't know if if that can be used as leverage. But now that they've got the both of them charged, and who knows, maybe they'll charge the father too, because I don't know, see how the father could not know about it. One of them will turn on the other, I'm picturing Lenny Briscoe type scenarios where they have the husband in the interrogation room saying, "We've got your mother in the other room, and she admitted to everything. You want to tell us what happened?" So I don't even know if the guy's lawyered up. There's nothing in the news about. There's no lawyer making any statements about the husband, so I don't know if he's, going to have a public defender or if he has a lawyer.
Are they searching any area at this point for Erica? Are they looking anywhere for her?
The family has sponsored search. Search parties, sweeping, areas where they might be. But the husband was known to have between the time he was last seen alive, which was New Year's, so it would be either December 31st or January 1st. From then until, I think, January 5th, when he finally reported her missing, he was known to have driven to as far south as like Baltimore. So the body might not be in the area. Hopefully the only way to find out. Is to get either him or his mother to confess. So that's really
founder or something.
Yeah. So on a lighter note, and then I'm going to hand it over to Holly. We're going to do our. It was a tough week for Florida Man stories. I got a guy who feeds me these things on a daily basis, and last week was just like filled with them. But I'm going to pick, this is actually Florida Woman and Florida Man. Lisa Guthrie of Delray Beach, tired of her son's shenanigans, chased him with a machete after he tried to leave to go buy a pack of cigarettes. Lisa Guthrie was intoxicated at her house Tuesday at 10:45 when her 31-year-old son told her he was going to go out to get cigarettes. She told him she didn't want him leaving the house at that late hour, but he left anyway. When he returned, his mother started yelling at him and grabbed a machete. It's unclear if the son was injured in the incident. That was a tough call. That's our Florida man story of the day, of the week. Now, we can talk about our things in the news. I will turn it over to my co-host, Heidi. And if you're listening and you want to call in, our number is 347-850-8445. Let us babble for a little while, and then we'll let you in and join the fun. Okay.
All right. So you know, with all these topics that we could talk about, I was going to say that I did read. I was reading the Department of Justice report on Ferguson, and I must say, if our listeners have not read this report, it's about 100 pages or so. If you've not read the report, what I will say is the news reports of what's in there, if you just go by the news reports, they sound horrific. They sound terrible, you know, when you look at the numbers and the number of people or the percentage of people that are stopped and that type of thing. That kind of thing sounds terrible. But the report not only talks about those facts, which are the numbers, the actual statistics, but they also go into actual people who have been harmed by these incidents of racial profiling, of blatantly ignoring the Constitution, particularly the Fourth Amendment, in their stops. And as I read this, and I'm going to share some of these with you as far as some of the stories. One of the things that they talk about is that, you know, people are stopped in Ferguson for walking, you know, walking down the street. And that is obviously, and we all know, Michael Brown was stopped when he and his friend were walking down the street, walking in the middle of the street. This is and this is what they call it, manner of walking and roadway charges. So in the time, this is part of the DOJ report, from 2011 to 2013, African Americans accounted for 95% of manner of walking and roadway charges and 94% of all failure to comply charges, which, you know, if a cop pulls up to you and says, get out of the street, and you say, fuck you, or you give him some sort of smart comment, you now have two charges, manner of walking in a roadway and failure to comply. So put that on the back burner.
Not walking on the sidewalk.
Right. Like walk, so these are, and they kind of, right. So if you are walking in a manner that is not, and this sounds so stupid and so petty, but if you are walking in a manner not consistent with normal everyday activity, which I don't, that's really open for interpretation. So what does that mean? I have to walk a straight line down the sidewalk, or I mean, it's just so petty. But it's obvious by reading this report that they literally were simply looking for ways to make money, and they talk about that throughout this. Is that the only reason that they're doing this? Well, there's a couple. But the main one is because they are looking to make as much money on as many people as possible. I know the report came out, I believe it was yesterday. The city of Ferguson has 20,000 residents. They have, if I remember correctly, and they currently have 16,000 people from the city of Ferguson that have arrest warrants. So think about that for just a minute, how many people. And these are for very petty crimes. And like I said, I been reading this, and they've been giving personal stories about this. But going back to Michael Brown, he was stopped because of the fact that he was walking in the middle of the street. That was why. I mean, we can go round and round about the fact that he, you know, what he did prior to that. However, it was not, and that's what the police chief said, it was not known at that time that that is why it was not known that he did that at the time that he was stopped. Whether he knew it,
right,
you know, immediately after or whatever, he didn't know it when he came up to Michael Brown. So that was why there was that. I mean, you can infer that the confrontation at the beginning happened because of the fact that this police department had this in its history. This is okay. In fact, some of the people that are talked to in this report are actual Ferguson police officers who acknowledged that they did, and they were encouraged to violate people's civil rights, violate people's constitutional rights, all in the name of making some bank. And that was the only reason. There was, you know, these are ridiculous crimes. Putting somebody in jail for walking across the street, ridiculous. I mean, that's what they were doing. So, you know, and they were, the city manager and the police chief would talk about it. They sent emails back and forth about increasing revenue. Police officers were, they were reprimanded or written up if they didn't get at least 28 tickets a month, if I remember correctly, if I remember what I read earlier today. So they were written up if they didn't get that many tickets written per day, per month. And that was a constant thing. That was, you know, through this police chief's reign, and I would have to imagine it was probably, you know, prior to that too. Because, I mean, just, you know, so these people that were targeted, and it was absolutely predominantly African-American, had no recourse. I mean, there was no recourse because nobody in city government, whether it was the judges or anybody, was listening to the people. It didn't matter what they said. If they tried to say anything, they were pretty much, I mean, not to, for lack of a better term, intimidated not to say anything or not to, you know, they weren't given any sort of recourse at all legally in the city at all.
So what is really, you know, tantamount to a like jaywalking ticket could escalate
right
into contempt of court or mm-hmm. worse if you fail to move over to the sidewalk. When a police car pulls up to you. You know, I see people walking on the street. We have sidewalks and, you know, like fitness type walkers, you can tell because they've got their, you know, running shoes on and you know, I ask people, like, how come you walk on the street and not on the sidewalk? And what they say is, you know, the street is a flatter surface. You know, they're less likely to trip and they're less likely to suffer, you know, impact type injuries. If they run or especially running on the street as opposed to sidewalk. If you run on the sidewalk, you're almost guaranteed to, I don't know about you, your sidewalks, but our neighborhood, it's the same sidewalks that have been here for like, you know, 40 years, and they're all crooked and they're all, you know, tree branches or tree roots are bumping through them, so you can't, you know, walk or run any distance on a sidewalk without, like, paying extra attention to your feet. So a lot of people walk on the street for that reason, and also the surface. Something about the road surface, the asphalt, as opposed to the cement, is more, you know, friendly to their feet. So I know that's why certain people walk on the street. You know, I don't think my town has any laws against that. But this sounds kind of like a broken windows kind of thing. You know, if you, a black kid with a hoodie, pants, walking on the street, he's a criminal.
Right. And, you know, you're right about the sidewalks. Here we have a lot of bike trails and walking trails. So, like, one of the people I work with, he trains for marathons. He actually was in the – he was actually at the Boston Marathon when the bomb hit. So he's a really big marathon runner. And he actually runs every day from work. And he prefers – specific areas because of the sidewalks that are close to work and down by the river where there's walking trails. So yeah, there's certain places that you know, as far as that's concerned. Now, so here's one of the stories I was going to read to you, and this is directly from the DOJ report. In the summer of 2012, an officer detained a 32-year-old African-American man who was sitting in his car cooling off after playing basketball. The officer arguably had grounds to stop and question the man since his windows appeared more deeply tinted than permitted under Ferguson's code. Without cause, the officer went on to accuse the man of being a pedophile, prohibited the man from using his cell phone, ordered the man out of his car for a pat-down despite having no reason to believe he was armed, and asked to search his car. When the man refused, citing his constitutional rights, the officer reportedly pointed a gun at his head and arrested him. The officer charged him with 8 different counts, including making a false declaration for initially providing the short form of his first name, Mike, instead of Michael, and an address that, although legitimate, differed from the one on his license. The officer also charged the man both with having an expired operator's license and with having no operator's license in possession. The man told the DOJ he lost his job as a contractor with the federal government because of these charges. And then there's more. I mean, that was because of the fact that the guy lost his job. I thought that was, you know, one of the ones that really stood out. You know, and it's just a continuous thing. You know, it's the same with minors. There's specific ordinances that they target, one of the things that the report talks about is the fact that the police do not understand, whether they don't understand on purpose or if they actually, because of their ignorance of the law, are applying certain statutes incorrectly. Or much broader than what the law allows, and it's a continue that whole. Like I said, if you read this, it's just amazing. So here's another one. In October 2011, an officer arrested 2 sisters who were backing their car into their driveway. The officer claimed the car had been idling in the middle of the street, warranting an investigation. While the women claimed they pulled up outside their home to drop someone off when the officer arrived. In any case, the officer arrested one sister for failing to provide her identification when requested. By the way, legally you don't have to show cops your identification. You do not. If they're just asking you to ask you, you know, if you're pulled over and you're pulled over for a reason, you know, you run a red light, you know, your taillight's out, whatever, that's fine. But you walking down the street, there is, you know, you have a constitutional right not to give them your ID unless there's a real reason for it. Not that you necessarily probably want to always go down that road, but technically they don't have a reason, they can't ask you. I mean, that's just the truth. So one of the sisters was arrested for failing to provide her identification. He arrested the other sister for getting out of the car after being ordered to stay inside. The 2 sisters spent the next 3 hours in jail. And then in a similar incident, police officers approached 2 people sitting in a car on a public street, asked the driver for ID. When the driver refused, insisting he was on a public street and should not have to answer questions, the officers ordered him out of his car and ultimately charged him with failure to comply. So all of the, you know, this is just a continuous, it was literally, according to some of the police in the police descriptions in this report, they were told to do this, to go around the city and find people doing normal things and charging them with crime. I mean, it almost sounds like I'm making it up. But if you read through this report, it's exactly what's going on. And, you know, when the Michael Brown thing happened and everybody started to, you know, protest and get angry and there was, you know, rioting, it, you know, for me, watching on television from a ways, you know, I'm not African American. I don't, you know, I don't live in Ferguson. But my first thought was, you know, things like this happen every day in communities around the country, sadly. But something is going on in this city that everybody literally lost their minds in the city about this action, this particular action. So I had this feeling in the back of my head that there was way more to the story than simply Michael Brown.
Yeah, probably it was like a simmering thing, and that was one of my questions about the Michael Brown shooting, and unfortunately, it's not an unusual thing to happen, but that story seemed to have legs when others didn't, and it was probably just the last straw of after years and years of oppression, of police state mentality. The broken windows theory got wild.
Right.
And that was the last straw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sad. When you are from a perspective, when you hear this and read this, you just think, why? You know, my first thought was, well, why didn't you say something? Why didn't you go on the on TV, and then I think, well, what am I thinking? I'm putting my, if you want to look at it this way, white privilege in a place where the people that are being targeted, the police know they have no recourse. These people that they're doing this to have no recourse because nobody's going to believe them. they could go to a local police station, but the local police station's going to just think, well, what are we going to do? You broke the law. You did this. And the police are telling us you did that and, you know, that you were acting suspiciously. And why would we think that anything was happening? And then when you also read through this and you realize that city government was in here, there's a discussion in here somewhere, and I'm reading through it or trying to find this part again, where there was on one day, and one judge, 500 people would go in front of the judge. 500 people, one judge, 500 people in a day. I mean, if you stop and think about that, a whole day, 500 people went in front of this judge to get their sentence, and, you know, and if you look through all of them, I'm sure they got whatever they'd have to be receiving fines and all that. That's 500 in one day. And I think it said that it wasn't every day, but that was the number of people. So can you imagine? I mean, can you imagine? They had to have people, according to the DOJ report, people would be lined up outside the door of the, it was like a door to the DMV for this judge's chamber of the people who have been targeted. And now to pay this fine, they're lined to see the justice literally around the corner. There's 500 people in line on these days, and this guy had court. Amazing. I live in a major city, and the county that I live in is Hennepin County, which is the biggest county in the entire state of Minnesota. I can guarantee you that if I go downtown and I sit in a judge's any of the judges, pick one. Just pick one randomly. Even the guy downtown that does drug court. So he's going to see all the drug offenders or a specific number of drug offenders per day. I guarantee you in my city that I'm not seeing anywhere near 500 people in that courtroom today if I went today or tomorrow or next Wednesday or next Thursday. Not even remotely close to that because that's not how it works. And that just is amazing, and just it's completely something that floors me when I read through this. That it just reads like a novel. It reads like a John Grisham novel. Like somebody, you know, I don't know if you've ever read John Grisham, but he would find things like this where there was some sort of really huge. I don't want to throw around the word conspiracy. But, maybe that's probably the best word to use, of all these officials to do this to this specific group of people, not necessarily government officials in his books, of course. A lot of times they're, you know, oil industry people or something to that effect or you know, something to that, you know, somebody like that, more business-oriented usually. But, you know, this is, it's just frightening that this is going on in a major American city, and maybe major is probably not the right word, but a small American city, and it's been going on for the length of time that it's been going on, and nothing happened until, you know, the Michael Brown death was a huge catalyst, and I can't see how anybody in government in that town, from that mayor to even the lowest law clerk, could stay there. I would like to see what Holder does for this, you know, for this town, for the residents of this town, going forward, because this just cannot continue. There has to be something that's done with this. I didn't even read through the stuff with excessive force. I mean, it's, like I said, it's 100 pages. I just skimmed some of the stuff and went through, they talk about use of canines on low-level unarmed offenders and its unreasonableness. You know, I mean, it's just ugly. And it's almost heartbreaking to read some of the stuff and how awful it is. It's just... You know, if you do get a chance to ever read this, it's a good, it's a really good read.
I don't know if I can get through the whole thing, but
There's no way I can get through the whole thing. It'd talk about the whole thing in the show. I mean, there's absolutely no way. We'd have to have 3-4 hours of a show to do that, and I won't. I mean, it's just too much. It's so depressing. I was reading it today, like I said, and it just... it's just one thing right after another. And, you know, the first one you look at and you go, wow, that's terrible. And then the next one's even worse. And it's just, I can't imagine. You know, and I remember when the Michael Brown thing happened and the police chief just, you know, would go out and do these press conferences and just look so... Like he was, you know, like he knew something we didn't, and it was all okay. And well, you know, he's a thug or whatever word he used. And it's like, when you find out this information, it's obvious why he quit. I mean, he had to after seeing this report. He would have been tarred and feathered otherwise. I mean, there's no way.
Yeah.
And at this point, I don't know what, you know, if they're going to have to disband Ferguson. I mean, how they're going to go about fixing this, because it needs some serious fixing, and those people who owe money to the city need to be reimbursed. And I don't know enough about this type of law to know if this is possible, but I wonder if a class action lawsuit against the city of Ferguson is possible for these transgressions and the state of Missouri, and I don't want to say allowing it to happen, but not giving checks and balances. I mean, somebody had to see that this was happening and just didn't do anything. So, I mean, I'll stop now because, you know, I'm just getting worked up at this point. But it's just,
probably,
you know, it's
probably
noxious.
Probably not much. I don't know what the federal government can do other than file lawsuits. I mean, there could be a state thing. I mean, it's happened here in New Jersey.
Right.
Where And it depends on state law. Every state has different laws, like where the state took over management of the city of Camden. The jury's still out on whether or not that was a good thing.
Right.
But, you know, having the state of Missouri take over the city of Ferguson might not be a good thing because it's,
I mean, it would just still be the same thing.
It's probably not good. Yeah, I don't know if that would be a good thing. I don't know if the federal government can swoop in and take over management of the city. State government might be able to, but the federal can't. So, you know,
right.
There's got to be some kind of, like you said, class action suit or something. We got a, we got a caller on.
Oh, so it looks like we have two callers on right now.
We have a caller who wants to talk about Ferguson, as long as we're still on that subject.
Okay. It looks like Dave is on. Dave and assuming probably Michael as well. Okay.
Okay.
All right, hold on. Just one second. Okay. Hey, Dave. Hello,
hey,
Michael.
Hey, how you doing? I definitely will talk about Ferguson. I had a couple other things. First,
okay.
I had a very small economic crisis today.
Oh, God.
I was pleased in the afternoon to get a Facebook friend request from Heidi, which I accepted. And then in the next half hour, my phone blew up from the number of posts that were put on it. And I went down to Verizon and told them I needed a new phone, and they were able on a big server to reactivate my Facebook account. And they suggested a data plan. They said I needed less than the IRS, but probably more than Social Security. So I'm not sure how I'm going to pay for this new phone plan. But I'm glad to be on your Facebook post.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Well,
let me just state,
you can't go wrong with Heidi, you know?
There's nothing wrong. A second thing, none of you have ever seen me in person. I have been accused and mistaken for many things in my life. I have never been mistaken for being African-American, but I actually did get arrested and or get a summons, whatever you want to call it, for walking along the traveled portion of a highway. So I can...
What?
Yeah, I did. I can sympathize with these folks. I was walking from downtown Fayetteville, North Carolina, back down toward Fort Bragg, on a road that had no sidewalks. Policemen, about three of us. And a policeman stopped us, and I probably gave him the most lip and actually got a ticket for walking on the traveled portion of a highway. And I think I called a couple of days later or something, I called the state police. And they said, we don't write tickets like that. That has to be a Fayetteville cop or something. He was kind of laughing at it. So, but the thing is, it has a good ending for me that unfortunately probably wouldn't have happened to a poor black person. Because I went to court, I challenged it, and not only did they throw it out, they gave me the real summary, the case dismissed, pay the cost. And I stood up and said, you know, there's some mitigating evidence here, you know, I don't even want to pay the cost. One of the things was I had to show up 2 weeks in a row because the cop was sick the first time. And I threw that in, and how all my patients at the Army Hospital were being deprived of mine not being there 2 weeks in a row. So the judge, you know, yes, Mr. Hamilton, or yes, you know, young David or something, we will waive the cost. And the cop jumps up. But I was sick. The judge leans over and in the most, what's that word, compromise? No, what's that word that means? In the most patronizing way, looks at him. Because we're not condemning you, officer, but we aren't going to charge the cost to this young man. The whole place just went up in laughter. So that's a true story.
Wow.
I guess the only thing, the main thing about Ferguson, and I know, like, Shonda, you know, months ago disagreed, but, you know, I just still feel that, you know, that the solution has to be in voting, getting more people of color, you know, in positions of power, which there are some running now. I think that can and has to be done. And Shonda talked about, you know, kind of the fear of voting from years ago. And I mean, I accept that on one hand, but I think, you know, if people have the courage to get out and protest and show themselves in public, you know, hopefully they'd also have the courage to vote.
So I tossed it around
for a while, and then it sometime later in the show, if anybody has any thoughts, I'd really like to talk about the Israeli elections today.
Gotcha. Yeah, that was probably going to be on the list too. Yeah, no problem.
So okay. Michael's there. Michael, why don't you say good evening, and we'll all get going.
Good evening. just to add to the callers, and I'm sorry, I did not catch your name, sir.
Dave. I'm the one that's always on with you, man.
Dave. Oh, okay. I just didn't hear it. I'm sorry. But just to add, Ferguson, I think they probably will finally get out and vote. There's probably a lot more to Ferguson than what we currently know, and Heidi already stated there's so much gruesome stuff that it probably takes, you know, weeks to discuss. But, you know, given how that city was operating and how corrupt and abusive not only the police but the prosecutor McCullough has been, as well as the mayor, and wouldn't surprise me one bit if the majority of the Ferguson residents who are African-American were perhaps blocked from voting, or if they did vote, if there was some kind of shenanigans to change the votes around, you're always stuck with the godforsaken racist right-wing officials running the damn city. I mean, we could come up with a list of perhaps many federal civil rights charges, and it will probably explain why Darren Wilson was not federally charged on the criminal offense because of the culture and the practice that has been set.
I can speak to the voting part. It's regarding the voting of the citizens of Ferguson. Only about 6% of the African American population voted in the election in 2013. Regarding the election in 2014, it wasn't much better. So that would have been after the Michael Brown issue occurred. If you want to, you know, that when he was murdered.
I think Michael.
Their next election is in April. Meaning next month, April. So in April 2015. So that's when their next municipal election, because the city of Ferguson has elections in off years and during off times, which also works in the favor of, in this case, the ruling, you know, the people in power, because though, you know, you have to be paying attention that, you know, you're voting in April instead of in November when everybody votes. So that also pulls them into the same idea that they're getting disenfranchised because of the fact that voting is at an odd time in off elections. So, you know, people forget, people don't go. I mean, there's a lot of issues
people
with
stressed.
Voting. Pardon me?
And I'm sorry, and people are stressed. Look, let's not forget also how many people, we got to also look at how many people in Ferguson are wrongly incarcerated, arrested, and convicted. I mean, this is a corrupt justice system within that local town, and you already have Michael Brown shot dead. How many other people of color unarmed have been killed? And I have pointed out that every unarmed person of color killed by police is equivalent to one less opposition vote for these right-wingers who are going tooth and nail to defend and justify every single white cop killing of an unarmed African-American. Now, this, believe it or not, ties in to the delay of the Loretta Lynch confirmation for her to become Attorney General. And I did promise that I would make the connection there. The thing is that besides Ms. Lynch being African-American and her being female, something which right-wing males have a big problem of, they don't know how to grow the hell up. The thing is, Ms. Lynch has an extraordinary record of law enforcement and going after corrupt, abusive police officers and going after corruptive, abusive politicians if necessary. All right? She was the prosecutor that put away one now former officer, Justin Volpe, for the sodomization of the sodomizer of Abner Louima. That was back in 97 in New York City when Mr. Volpe took a broomstick and ran it up the rectum of Mr. Louima and really beat the crap out of him. And other officers have engaged in the blue wall of silence and cover-up team of 4-5 reports. Now, all the while, who was mayor at that time who was always fostering this kind of behavior? Rudy Giuliani, who does not hesitate to bash and open his mouth against President Obama and people of color in general throughout this entire nation, as if he's not, as if he hasn't corrupted the NYPD enough while he was mayor. And he said on the Fox station, "I controlled or I ran the police department," after he perjured himself, saying in two different cases that he didn't control the police department. I mean, the guy is a racist and a liar, but more on him later. But I'm wondering, like, why the hell is it that he's going on from one right-wing show to another right-wing show, bashing people of color and justifying and trying to defend and foster and encourage this kind of police abuse going on, as if he's trying to make maybe another run for the presidency or something? I mean, this guy, every time he opens his mouth, a person of color or a female is hurt or killed because of his rhetoric. Just like with Sarah Palin and some of these other right-wing jerks that are so reckless with their mouths and so malicious that something terrible happens to the people that they target. So with this delay of Loretta Lynch by the GOP, it has me wondering if any of these politicians engage in the same kind of sinister behavior, using and misusing law enforcement for their own sick, negative, unethical political purposes. It's totally unlawful and unconstitutional. Let's not forget, ladies and gentlemen, that just a few years ago, when we had the Occupy movement, not just here in Wall Street, New York City, but going in the other cities of Detroit, Oakland, L.A., wherever major city is, you name it, when it was announced that there was going to be Occupy protests, and it was a few months in advance before the events took place, there was a mysterious late-night conference telephone call between all Republican governors and Republican mayors throughout the nation. And it was late night as terms of, let's say, midnight or 2 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. No one knows what the hell they were discussing, why it was being so damn secretive. But then when the Occupy movements began and you saw all this relentless, inexcusable police abuse, even towards the media reps bashing of the television cameras, I've never seen anything like it. These cops were behaving worse than the common thugs or the terrorists, for God's sake. And now you put two and two together, it's obvious they were getting orders from the top as to go ahead and just abuse and silence the protesters and come up with this bullshit tactic or bullshit reason that it was the protesters acting unruly and we were defending ourselves. Yeah, right. And you have cops that were on tape before the protests began, saying, "Oh, I'm going to put my nightstick in good work tonight. Somebody's going to be feeling this tonight." It's all freaking premeditated. So Loretta Lynch, if she becomes, when she becomes Attorney General, it would not surprise me that not only would she continue the investigations of Ferguson and really finally reform that city, probably starting off fresh with more ethical, lawful, and constitutional law enforcement, but the same stuff is going to wind up hitting New York City, L.A., all these other cities that have had instances of police misconduct under the direction of corrupt right-wing racist politicians. Everybody's going to be feeling the effect, and it comes down to one five-letter word that begins with the letter K, something in which the Republicans have a hard time handling, and that word is karma. And if Republicans do not like my speaking the truth, may I suggest for them to follow their own fellow Republicans' advice, whose name is Herman Cain, and blame themselves. Am I making sense?
Okay. Yep. Make perfect sense. There's a parallel between the reign of terror of Giuliani and institutionalized racist behavior of law enforcement in Ferguson. If you looked at the history of
racial
both,
abuse.
Good point. Are we done?
Did I ever tell you guys about the case of Shauna Ford that might be connected to this as well? And which is why I feel people like Giuliani and many of these right-wing pundits ought to face criminal charges.
Hold on. So maybe I'm missing something as far as how Giuliani has anything to do with Ferguson. I mean, I get the police and the corruption and that type of thing. But we're going to circle it back to the Ferguson and the DOJ
report. Oh, you want me to make the connection?
Go back to Ferguson and the DOJ report. I think we're getting a little bit off. I think we're getting a little bit off into the clouds here, just a titch. So
not quite.
Not quite, Heidi.
I don't.
And I understand that there's police corruption in New York, but possibly it might be a little bit of a stretch to equate Rudy Giuliani with Ferguson, insofar as here's my point of view. Just because. So this country has 50 different states, and every state has hundreds and thousands of little towns, cities, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very hard time saying because Rudy Giuliani did A, people in Ferguson that are charged in Ferguson, Missouri did B, and let me explain why I say that. I don't subscribe to this idea that I have to watch somebody do something bad, and because I watch that person do bad, I will now do bad. So I don't subscribe to that idea that says that, look, Rudy Giuliani's doing this. I am a bad cop or I'm a bad police chief in this town. I'm going to do this too because this is a great way to make
money. Heidi, don't you?
I think,
don't you think Rudy Giuliani did bad and was rewarded and praised and got a lot of publicity for it.
Absolutely.
So then, if you're saying
me,
be like me and you're a bad person, you are spreading bad.
What I'm saying is my thought for Ferguson, when we're talking about Ferguson, is this. Constant budget cuts for local, state, by the Fed, matched by the state because Republicans don't like to spend money on anything. And so everything is a budget cut except, of course, you know, getting tax cuts for the rich. So whenever you do a budget cut, so whenever you cut the police, you cut the fire, you cut, you know, city services, and that includes Ferguson, St. Louis, whatever, it's not like those municipalities suddenly stopped having to spend that money. They have to still spend that money. They have to find a way to make that money back that they keep getting cut. So what they do is they go, hey, what better way for us to get this money back than let's go after our part of our population that has no voice. We're not going to, we can't go after the rich guy that lives at the side of the, you know, the long winding road that now got a great, beautiful tax cut from our Republican, you know, lawmakers. But we can go after the guy that makes $20,000 a year, owns a rickety car. Hey, you know what? We can fine him for crossing the street the wrong way. We can fine him because his mirror is cracked. We can fine him because he's doing X, Y, and Z, because he's sitting in a car, because he's the wrong color, whatever. So it becomes a big, huge enterprise at a local level. Yes, Rudy Giuliani was extremely bad in what he did in New York, and I will tell you that all day. But I, for me to say because of what Rudy did, they did this. I can't see that. You know, unless they say because we saw Rudy Giuliani do this. You know what I'm saying? We're going way past what's really going on, and what's really going on in my head is. Racism exists everywhere in this country. There is nobody can dispute that. What I think happened in Ferguson was that racism became let's make money off these people, and because of these tax cuts that we still need to provide these services because we still have people in our town, we still need to provide these services and make this money to do X, Y, and Z. We will do it on the backs of these people. And
I really think your average shitty cop does it because he enjoys it more than it makes money for the town. I really do. I'm sorry.
The average
shitty cop, you know, beats up on poor people and black people because they enjoy it more than they figure on how much revenue the town's going to get from it.
That's the influence that I'm talking about. Let me tell you.
There are those cops out there. Hold on a second, Michael. When I read this particular, and we're only talking about Ferguson now. I'm not going to go. You know, I'm not going to talk about Montana. I'm not going to talk about Denver. I'm not going to talk about LA because what I'm talking about is the Justice Department review and their discussion and their report about Ferguson specifically was, and if you read it, and it's like I said before, it's about 100 pages. It details the cops actually saying, these Ferguson cops saying, yeah, we did it because it was a way to make revenue. Now, of course, we can all say, right, that's what they say, but they probably were racist too, and I'm not going to argue that point. But what I'm saying is they were pressured and they were written up and they were in trouble if they didn't do this. And in fact, there's at least one person in here that was an officer of Ferguson TV that said they didn't feel right doing it, but if they didn't do it, they were in trouble, which again goes back to that whole, you know, mentality. We're going to make them do it, and this is how we're going to do it, and everybody's going to do it, and if not, you're going to lose your job. And, you know, it's all on that cycle. And I'm not by any stretch of the imagination trying to say that racism didn't play a part, because it absolutely did. And that's why they were able to do it for so long, is that they were able to, and, you know, and I just go back to when the Michael Brown shooting happened, and the way that they talked about this dead kid made my blood boil. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? The kid, I don't care what he did at the convenience store. I used to work with a freaking convenience store when I was younger. People would come in and be bastards all the time. Who cares? I don't want him dead. You know, it's just one of those things where, you know what, you give him a citation, you tell him he has to pay it back, and he goes on his merry way. And you trespass him from the store. When I worked at the convenience store, we trespassed people all the time. They weren't allowed to come back because they acted like idiots at our store. Bottom line, nobody got shot, killed, or, you know, the whole thing. That's how it worked. And, you know, that for me, the whole, this report is so ugly and so, you know, just shows you just the hatred and the ignorance for this particular police force. And you know, the DOJ, and I don't know if the DOJ, I'm assuming that they have investigated the NYPD. I know that they investigated around the same time as Ferguson. They investigated Cleveland, and they investigated Albuquerque. Similar issues. Right. And so if they have, you know, when they do these sorts of investigations, there has to be, for all of these departments, some sort of, you know, national, and by that I mean federal, change. You know, for Ferguson, there needs to be a change. And
yes.
For Albuquerque, there needs to be a change. And for Cleveland, and for New York. And, you know, I live in Minneapolis. We've received scathing DOJ reports ourselves. Right now, we have similar issues regarding who's targeted. The difference between us, though, and like a Ferguson, is we're not doing it for money. I think it is, you know, it is the racism idea, and it's the, well, they're black, they must be up to something bad mentality. But the difference is, for us, is that we are having discussions with community leaders, and by us, I mean our police force, and the police chiefs of these various cities that were mentioned in these reports, and various neighborhoods that are looking to work with local leaders to make sure that we don't have this continuing, because we know it's important not to do this, that we want everybody should, whether you're a cop or just a regular citizen, you would want everybody to be treated fairly, and if you're not, that's not okay. My issue is you know, it's a stretch for me to say because somebody in New York did something, somebody in St. Louis, Ferguson, or Minneapolis is going to do it because he did it. I think, A, number one, it gives Rudy Giuliani way more influence than he should have or deserves. And number two, it just doesn't hold water because people are bad, whether somebody else is bad or not, I think. So.
There's just a couple of details that I neglected to inform you guys. First off, when Rudy was.
I'm not interrupt, but we do want to get to the BB, the election.
I know.
So we'll give this another 5 or 10 minutes, and we'll get to BB. Okay, go on, Michael.
Exactly. Yeah. When Rudy was.
Less than a half hour left, so. Let's wrap this up and
talk about
something else.
Right, okay, I'm trying to get through this as fast as I can. But when Rudy was mayor, he did travel around city to city, supposedly trying to show police forces how to fight crime. No telling what kind of details was given, and he was doing the same thing after he left office. And then nowadays, he's using public airwaves like the other right-wing pundits do, and just making malicious statements and stereotypes about people of color as always the criminals, as always the terrorists, as always the bad guys, and showing and telling that, you know, police officers take actions that they did, they need to be commended. How the hell are you going to say you're supposed to commend a police officer for shooting an unarmed person of color? And then they would say, we thought they had a gun. It's a tragedy, not a crime. We have 20 years of that bullshit going on. And
right.
Again, it's the negative influences by people
right.
like Rudy Giuliani when he was mayor. And now he's going throughout the nation going to say, like, I ran the police department, so I know what I'm talking about, and trying to promote this kind of injustice nationwide. And he's not the only one either.
So then this is what I would say, or this is what I would ask. Then this is what I would ask. So if that is true, then where do we go from here? Because for me, I apologize. I know that Rudy is your catalyst. But whenever I hear the name Rudy Giuliani, I always think of Sarah Palin. And the reason I say that is I think Sarah Palin and Rudy Giuliani are two people that get way more press than they deserve. And the more that those names pass my lips, the more they get more publicity than they deserve. So,
and the perfect, connection,
Heidi. I'm sorry, what?
And a perfect connection you made, and goes right to my argument.
No,
every time they open their mouth, somebody gets hurt or killed.
Like, yeah, what I was going to say, maybe you misunderstood what I was saying. What I'm saying is we give them power when we talk about them, and that's why I try not to say Sarah Palin's name. Now I've said it twice. I'm going to be, if there's a hell, I'm going to it. So, but what I'm saying is it is – you know, if what you're saying is true, and he went around and all these police departments adopted this broken window thing where, you know, if there's a broken window, we want to, you know, cover it and fix it, and if we see somebody walking across the street the wrong way, we should arrest them. You know, here's the thing. You know, police departments now are you know, going to a different, you know, our technology is much different than it was in 2001. You know, so there's a lot of different ways to fight crimes, quote-unquote, versus being, you know, being physical, being in people's faces and arresting them for bullshit. I mean, there really is. Plus, you know, the other issue is the cost of this stuff, housing people in jail because they, you know, they had a broken taillight is just ridiculous. And at some point, somebody's going to say, and people are going to say, why are our costs for incarceration that this high for such petty crimes? Because the people who pay for this are not the Rudy Giulianis of the world. It's us. And so at some point we have to say enough that this is bullshit. And while it's great that we're trying to make neighborhoods safe, the way to go about doing that is not to arrest people and not to do this stuff that Ferguson is doing. Because all it ends up doing is you create a group of people, and this is what's happened in Ferguson. You create a community that literally is afraid to walk out their door because they're going to be targeted by police. And that probably very easily feeds into the reason that they vote at a 6% rate because they're afraid. And that is unconscionable for me, that is what that happened. I don't blame Rudy Giuliani. I blame the people that work in Ferguson because those are the people that perpetrated this bullshit on these people in Ferguson. Granted, Rudy Giuliani's reign of terror in New York probably has exactly the same stories there, and I understand that. But these people in Ferguson have no voice, have zero, and they need us collectively to stay enough. And New York City needs the same thing. Now, we have a different mayor, so Rudy has nothing to do with the mayor right now. But de Blasio can do what he can to fix this, so we don't have that in New York. Cleveland and Albuquerque have other issues that are very similar to what Ferguson has, and they also need to clean house and figure out how to make it much safer for everyone, but also fair for everyone. Because it doesn't matter the color of your skin, it matters what's in your heart. And when you treat people like that, what do you expect to have end up in those cities? But bad things. And we just need to stop it. And we don't, you know, the blaming is easy. It's the fixing and trying to make it better, which is difficult. And that's all I have to say about that.
Absolutely. Oh, and just for the record, that the cop that was shot, the suspect said they had a report that the suspect was aiming at somebody else and not at the cops, just for that record.
Right, yeah. And I don't know how Jeff feels about this, but I purposely didn't want to talk about that shooting for a couple of reasons. One, we don't know all the, you know, was he shooting at the actual cops? I mean, my thought would be that's pretty probable. Considering where they were, he probably was shooting at them. I don't condone shooting police, no matter what. Not okay. It just is not okay, in my opinion, in any situation. The bad part is the two people that were shot, and I mean, when I say bad part, I should preface that by saying it's always bad, again, to shoot a cop, but neither one of those cops are Ferguson cops. One was from St. Louis County, and one was from a nearby town. So anything going on in Ferguson, neither one of those police officers had anything to do with. So, you know, that makes it even worse, if possible, that these two cops were shot. So I don't condone any sort of police shooting, whether he's trying to say it was an accident or not. I'm not okay with either one of those. But, yeah, so that's just my opinion on that. You know, it's never okay to shoot a police officer under any circumstances. If they're,
We just had one in Philly last week. A cop was shot at a GameStop store. He was in the process of buying a video game for one of his sons, and got shot and killed during an armed robbery. A video.
Mm-hmm.
They just buried him the other day. Cops put their lives on the line every day. All right, we got 18 minutes. What else do you want to talk about? You want to talk about the election in Israel?
Yeah.
Dave, you got something to say about that?
Did you? Am I on or not?
Yes.
Okay,
yep, you're on.
I had to switch phones. My home phone ran out of juice again. Well, I mean, I'm just disappointed to see, Netanyahu getting back in. And, you know, in addition to the Iran issue, I mean, flat out said.
CNN and HuffPo are both saying it's too close to call currently. So they are both saying that it hasn't been called yet. So
I could have sworn by mid afternoon they said he was going to make it.
Saw that too. And then now it's changed again. It said that now it's too close to call. So I wonder if Bibi's going to get that Al Gore thing where he's declared the winner and then he loses to the other guy.
What's ironic is, as you said, Heidi, it is too close to call, as many reports are stating, but Netanyahu's already declaring victory. So it's like, you know, how the hell is he jumping the gun unless he knows something that we don't? Is it a big
No,
or
he's
something?
Just being a douche. No, I mean that in the nicest way possible by the fact that politicians do that all the time. I don't think he knows anything.
I don't know much.
I think he does that.
Was there also whatever they call their legislature up for election also?
Israel is difficult for Americans to understand, because it's not like here where, you know, it's to vote for president. You know, so today is a presidential election, Obama versus Mitt Romney. Oh, look, Obama won. It's not that easy, because the winners are really depending on who got the most votes. And of course, they don't have a two-party system. I think there's I have to look it up, but there's many. I think there was many more than that, if I remember correctly. Dave, I don't know. Maybe you know more about this than I do.
I'm not sure, but I thought he was in danger of losing his own seat. I thought he was in danger of losing his own seat.
Yeah, he is. And I thought, and I could be wrong, but when I read it earlier today, it had said that, I read a report on CNN earlier today, it had said that it's kind of one of those things where so I think there's four or five or six parties. So everybody votes, all citizens vote, and then whatever the ruling party is. So if the Democrats in the United States, for example, win the presidency or win the most votes, per se, then they get the most seats. So if the Democrats, and I'm using Democrats as an example, in the United States, win the most votes in the United States, then the Democrats get the most seats. So they get the president, they get most seats in, you know, the parliament, or in our case, of course, Congress, and so on. And then the second party that wins the second most votes gets the second most, and so on and so on and so on. So it's still very close between Bibi, Netanyahu's party, and the other guy's party, whose name I can't remember right now. But so, yeah, so it's close, at least from everything that's being said. And I'm looking around to see if it's, Netanyahu already said it was a great victory. When was this time? This was from 4:45 this afternoon, but now it's saying it's too close to call. Yeah, so it's changed, at least for now, is this possible? I guess that he knows more than he's saying, but I don't know. I mean, their elections tend to be pretty straightforward, it sounds like. I don't know how many times we could argue about their elections, but the other guy, the Zionist Union, the center-left Zionist Union is the other party that he's tied with, I guess you could say. So, a lot of that could just be Bibi just being Bibi and trying to be tough and that type of thing. I mean, one of the things is from what I've read, it sounds like it would be an easier path for Bibi to win because he's well known and he has, certain things that he talks about they like, and everybody in the country likes. So I don't know, but that's so far that's what we have, and it doesn't seem like there's a lot yet. Nobody's been declared the winner, at least in anything that I've seen while I've been talking about it. But Jeff, do you know anything about how it works by chance or no?
Not at all.
Not really. Okay. I mean, my kind of like interest in it is that, if Israel, goes, I don't want to say more and more rogue, but, more and more hard line, and with the exception of the Republican senators, manages to piss off the U.S. to some degree after a while. I mean, I don't want to be mean and say we're their only friend, but, we're clearly their best, strongest, most supportive friend, we spend, a fair amount of, propping up their military, even though their overall economy probably would do well, on its own. What's the future going to hold, or will they ever, be pressured to moderate some of their views? It's been going on for what? It's been going on for exactly how long since I've been born. And I think it's real
right.
stuff. And,
yeah. I mean,
really,
you're right about Netanyahu as far as, because he's lost elections before and come back. So he's kind of like the Energizer Bunny or the what was the name of the guy that never died, but a cyborg? Where he just keeps coming back, they think he's dead, or maybe he's like Dick Nixon, I guess. Maybe that would be another way to describe him, that he just keeps coming back. But in 2009, he promised that he would make a Palestinian state for the Palestinians, and now this time, a day or so ago, he said he will not be doing that. There will be no Palestinian state. So it's obvious that he's appealing to the hardliners, and it's kind of, there is a point where, I don't know, I mean, we give them so much money. I mean, what is the point? I mean, where do you, where do you fall? You fall with Israel, as the United States, do we always fall with Israel no matter what? Or is there a point where we say, you're kind of making some mistakes here. I mean, I don't know. I mean, where is the line for us? I don't know.
Well, what's so interesting in all of this is that well, I wonder how many countries are watching this particular election, just like, remember how many countries were watching our presidential elections when it came to President Obama, not just in 2008, but in 2012. And then the fact that Netanyahu comes into the U.S. by invitation of Republican John Boehner, Speaker of the House, and then you have the 47 senators of Republicans engaging in that letter towards Iran, you know, don't you think this is kind of like really, I don't want to use the word scary stuff, but stuff to be really concerning of as to what will make us pay attention as to what's going on with the Netanyahu election and how would that affect us here in the USA? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. All right, we got like 9 minutes left. I don't think we have time to get going to anything else in depth. I got the only thing I have to say right now, real short about Hillary's emails is you don't mix your work email with your personal email. I have a BlackBerry, my work email. I have a phone, my personal email. And take all the politics out of it. You know, when you use your personal email to conduct work business, you're work doing business outside the company firewall, and it's just you're opening yourself up to bad things happening, especially with, you know, in a job sense as that. So, I mean, her intention was to control all of the emails that went in and out of her account, and I just don't think that's a good thing. But we'll have to take that on another time. That needs more conversation.
Yeah.
That's just.
I don't. I disagree, Jeff. I don't think it's worth 9 minutes of talk rather than needing more than 9 minutes to talk about it. I mean, I don't know. It's over. It's done. People that like Hillary will say, fine, it doesn't matter. People that hate her use it as a reason to barbecue her. I mean,
yeah.
You know, let's get on to something important. I don't know.
It's pretty much to do about nothing when you got several Republican officials doing the same thing. So,
yeah, Jeb Bush.
Jeb Bush, Scott Walker, from Texas.
Just because somebody else did something that doesn't make it right.
I understand.
But they
you know,
got no business raising the issues. They're doing it themselves.
Well,
that's
where
my point
is. I mean, here's what I would say. I mean, Jeff, you have a point, and your point is valid. One of my things when I heard about this is like, oh, God, really? Now we have to go through Emailgate? Because everything Hillary does is amplified 3 million times over what it should be.
Thank you.
And so here's what I will say. I'll give you several bullet points about my feelings about this. One, do I think it's much ado about nothing? It possibly could be. On that point, you know, if you're Hillary Clinton, that they literally, if you drop the donut on the damn ground, somebody's going to be behind you, and Fox News is going to have this expose of you littering, and what is Hillary doing to destroy the environment? I mean, you know that's what's going to happen. So why would, you know, if you're Hillary Clinton, why would you do that? Why would you not just use everybody, you know, the email like everybody else uses? So that point is valid. That point is, why don't you do that? It's just stupid to not, right? I mean, it makes sense. But the other point I can see as well, it is much ado about nothing. It's, you know, she has this email address the whole entire time that she was Secretary of State. So as far as it being, oh, the smoking gun was the Benghazi thing, no, that wouldn't be a smoking gun because she had it during the whole entire time she was, you know, the Secretary of State. So there is no, you know, culpability. You know, she's not, like, sneaking it through right before Benghazi or right after. So that, in my opinion, is invalid. So it is, you know, so there's points on both sides. You know, is it that big a deal because of the fact that other people did it? You know, John Kerry was the first Secretary of State that did use this particular email. You know, so there's a lot of arguments on both sides. What my point would be and what I would say is don't be an idiot. You're Hillary Clinton. And, you know, everybody's
right.
going to look at everything you say, and it's going to be amplified, right?
I never knew this was to be a problem, you know, until they made the issue of it.
Let me just add, like, I could understand, you know, the way she gets beat up, why she would want to do that. But either the political tone deafness or the hubris to think that it was never going to come to light, that's what I don't get.
Right. And you know,
did she really think nobody was going to find out? Does she think that Republican hackers aren't already in that server and don't have a data mine full of shit ready to dump as soon as she announces the president? Does she believe
Probably.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
Jeff,
I'm sorry.
I got a simple question for Jeff.
I know
it would be a long answer with a lot of ifs and buts. But at the end of the day, do you more like or dislike Hillary Clinton?
Say it again.
I said I know there'd be a million ifs, but I said at the end of the day, do you more like or dislike Hillary Clinton?
You're breaking up. Do I like her?
Do you like or dislike her? And, you know, which do you do more?
Now
you're breaking up.
That should be one or the other, I would say dislike.
Yeah, okay, because that's kind of come out in the past, yeah. At least you admitted it's cool.
I did vote for her in the New Jersey primary over Obama, though, because I thought she was tougher and would have been able to fight the Republicans harder, but I see I was probably incorrect.
Okay, we have
two minutes left.
But
my view has changed. All right.
I was going to say, that would be actually a good topic. A show just about Hillary Clinton. We have people talk about both sides of this issue. That probably would be kind of volatile, but it would be a good show, I think. We have 1 minute and 54 seconds. Yeah, that could be, you know, it could be damaging.
We have to sometimes have something where we're going to have a little disagreement instead of the old liberal love-in where everybody agrees with everybody else. So it would be good.
I think you're right. Yeah, and this would be one of those. That would be one of those topics that would get people, you know, on their sides. That's for absolutely sure.
I'm
so
down for
last word? Yeah, that would be good, actually. Any last words, Jeff?
I'll say goodnight.
Thank everybody.
Good night, guys.
And I take a night too.
For a great show, and we'll see you next Tuesday. We have a few more minutes left, but I'm signing off for the night. Thank you, and good night.
Good night, everybody. Have a lovely evening.
Yep.